Oh, got my cup of tea ready as well. Lovely.
They're bad. They're boys. And occasionally, they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back.
Baby, come back. When the bye, 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 bye. When the bye, 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 bye. I must admit I was a clone to be messing around. But that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come
back. But bye, 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 bye.
But bye, 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 bye.
Hello, Jen Rainsford. Hello, listener. Welcome to Bad Boy Running.
Hello, David Hellard. Hello, listener and viewer.
And viewer and viewers. Indeed. Oh, I'm a little bit jaded this morning. Went hashing last night. Yeah.
You hashing?
Yeah, well, not running. I'm back injured, sadly. But went along because an old returnee, Mark, who used to hash years ago, returned, who he hasn't seen him for quite a few years, but he used to be the record holder for the extended Bob Graham round.
Oh, really?
And I think the Ramsey rounds. Yeah.
What's the extended Bob Graham round?
So you just keep on going for 24 hours and see how many peaks you can get. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've not heard of that. That's interesting. Wow.
I mean, it's substantially more if you think that these days, what Jack was doing it in 12 hours something. So.
Oh, yeah. Imagine doing it again.
Yeah. So when, if you think that, my head is not in it. Go for the double, for example. Actually, the double at some point. Actually, no, you'd never do it in 24 hours. But
what did Nikki Spinks do it in?
She wanted to do them in under 48 hours, and I think the Bob was fine. It was the Ramsey round that was the more challenging one, just it's tight for time. But welcome to Bad Boy Running. Obviously, in the midst of football, it's been fascinating, the coverage. The BBC didn't show the opening ceremony.
See, I was watching it on the BBC, and I missed them missing the opening ceremony because I watched the opening ceremony on the BBC, but then I didn't realise that I was watching, because I was watching it on iPlayer on our PS4, and so I watched the opening ceremony with Hugo. And not realise it. And because it was that, and it had Radio 5 live commentary, which is a bit weird when you've got radio commentary over the top.
So that's why. Okay, that makes sense now.
So they did show it. Show it on BBC One. Like you could have got it. And I do think part of that is to do with the fact that they want you to use iPlayer as well. apart from the fact that iPlayer, I think, was down for a portion of the England game because I think so many people were trying to log on from at work and places like that as well. Because of course we interviewed Jack, how do you say his name? Kunzel,
I think. Yeah. Kunzel,
that evening. And you were a little bit worse for wear.
Oh yeah, true actually. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really sure what the etiquette is on football matches in the day, whether you just go all in or not.
What I loved were the pictures on like Instagram of people in pubs at 9:45 getting ready. Like, there's no reason for you to be in a pub at 9:45. It doesn't start till 1. Like, what? I know that, you want to be there for the build-up, but that you literally, like, dropped the kids at school or did whatever you needed to do, and now you're in the pub. That's insane.
You've got to get your seat. We couldn't get a seat. See, the city was packed out. Yeah, couldn't book anywhere. I thought it was fascinating. The weird, it's almost when with the BBC commentators talking about the geopolitics, it's just strange because they're not meant to be doing that. They're not suited to it. They're not experts. And suddenly they're having to give, almost be the voice of the nation in how they represent their views. And you're like, yeah, stick to football, mate. I get why you're doing this, but...
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird. Like, it's like Gary Neville has been slated and he's given his defence and now he's on the BBC defending it. And you're like, but is that really what the BBC coverage is supposed to be? Gary Neville defending himself. I just feel it so massively. I mean, like, there's hypocrisy upon hypocrisy. I'm like, there's Alan Shearer there who, like, as part of the, he has welcomed the takeover of Newcastle by Saudi fucking Arabia.
Yeah.
Like, and so I don't understand how I don't. It's weird because the BBC has always had to be like politically impartial.
Yeah.
And then when it does stuff like this, you're like, okay, it's good that, you know, it's been done from a personal perspective. I think it's good, but from a what I think that organisation should be doing perspective, like you say, it doesn't, it kind of doesn't.
If you don't hire individuals who you're then making them defend themselves, but you're paying them to be there to make them defend themselves, or
weird. It is weird. I do understand. Like the difficulty is that Piers Morgan criticizes that, and if Piers Morgan criticizes it, you instantly feel as though he's on the wrong side of the argument, and so you should be on the other side of the argument, even though I think on this one he's actually probably right.
Well, we've heard in the past that, you know, you have a huge correlation between your views and,
I know, it's
and
awful.
Piers Morgan's. Yeah.
It's terrible. It's awful when you've got like really awful people who agree with the same things as you for totally different reasons, and you're just on the same side of the argument. It's a horrible, horrible place to be. But the thing is, it's interesting, you know, like with the coverage and stuff like that. Did you not see any of the opening ceremony at all?
None. Well, what was in it? Because
it was just the usual, really, you know, bollocks. It had Morgan Freeman, who, I don't know, he just must have got a wheelbarrow full of cash. to just do
Morgan
that.
Morgan Freeman. I would not have guessed that.
Oh God. I mean, he was wandering around. He was like wandering around, like literally going, I cannot believe I've made this much money.
Is he he's the voice of God. Is he the voice of Allah as well?
Yeah, I think he did he's done it several, I think it was either Discovery Channel, National Geographic. You know, like the story of the Bible and the story of humanity, and you know, he's just got that voice, isn't he, where it allows you to do it. And so they hired him to do this.
Does he use the same lines from The Shawshank, where he's like, I'd like to say the gay fans survived those showers. I'd like to say that. Because I mean, he's synonymous with a film to do with like aggressive homosexuality.
I don't know. It was your usual like political whitewash thing. It was talking about diversity and inclusion and one voice, you know, just all the usual shit that it talks about that doesn't mean anything when you're kind of, you know, what the background is to it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it had, you know, the usual, it had some Korean pop singer who everyone's gone fucking mad for, who I have never heard of before, but he did some singing and dancing and stuff.
He's gonna be a BTS guy, is he?
It was just really average. I mean, like, the opening ceremony of the World Cup is always a bit shit, isn't it? Like, Olympic opening ceremonies, I think, are normally a little bit better.
Yeah, all I can think is Diana Ross missing the goal. That's the only thing I can think of as well.
That is just the one image that I have. I literally could not think of another World Cup opening ceremony where anything else happens. I think that's how you make it memorable. But yeah, and there was a whole thing, oh, you know, the whole world's, under, you know, coming into our Bedouin tent or together. And, you know, it's just a load of platitudes. And they had like things like different tops, you know, things, these people dressed as football shirts, which is a bit fucking weird, like wandering on. And it was just, it was your usual meaningless, like rubbish.
Well, they're saying, I can't remember what I'd seen, but they were, it was maybe John Oliver, where he was talking about how the worry is that as soon as the games begin, everyone forgets everything else, and people get too excited about the sport, and that's the sport wash, and that happened with Russia. No one really remembers anything about Russia rather than the football. And so whether that will happen now.
I think, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think that's it. I think, you know, people like Alex Scott, because of course they did that. The thing is, there's controversy after controversy because all the stuff that people say they're going to do, they don't end up doing, like the armbands thing, which, you know, they said they're going to wear the One Love armbands, and then like just before they decided not to, they chose not to because FIFA wouldn't tell them whether they were all going to get booked or not if they did it, you know, and whatever you think about that, you know, but they did they take the knee? I didn't see it. So it's weird, but it's weird how, you know, FIFA say, you know, it's not supposed to be political or, you know, have a political or environmental or, you know, social message. But you're like, I think you lose the argument when essentially you're using the World Cup for political means. I think as soon as you do that and you're using it for political means, floodgates open. Like, you know, go on there with a Palestinian fucking flag, go on there with whatever, you know, it's like you have lost all respect knowing it. And it kind of has been like that. Like, the thing that's forgotten about the England game, which actually was the most important thing about that, I think, from a political perspective, was the fact that what Iran did. Like, Iran didn't, you know, their players didn't sing the national anthem.
Yeah.
And their fans were also supporting all of the demonstrators. I mean, that was a massive, massive thing to do. Just got totally overshadowed by the fact that, you know, England beat them 6-2. But that was huge. That was absolutely huge in terms of what that means. And as a political statement.
Yeah, yeah, and you know that they could still be repercussions from that. And
there will be repercussions. Yeah, from that. There will be. There's not. It's like it's no doubt. There's going to be repercussions, and that's regimes
change on things like that. So much of political power is based off confidence, right? And the firm belief that it can't be changed. And so, you know, look at the fall of Ceausescu. Just happened in one speech, his whole empire crumbled. So, I've got a new sport for us to love.
Ooh. Oh, go on.
And
I was going to say, before we do this, I do have to say, like, just like on this thing, like, we've been criticizing Qatar and stuff like that. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, fuck, you know, you do, like, the amount of stuff that Qatar has its fingers in and stuff like that. And, we were talking about, you know, not supporting Qatar and stuff like that. And I think it was like literally 24 hours later, I was watching Hugo walk around in a PSG shirt thinking, how much money have I given to Qatar? Like, of course, PSG is owned by, it's essentially a nation team. I'm like, we spent so much money with Qatar. Like, it's so ridiculous. And of course, I go to Sainsbury's nearly every day. And of course, Qatar, you know, they've got, you know, investment fair. Oh, Sainsbury's, Harrods, Mayfair. Just like the stuff that they own is like insane. Yeah, of course they do. Of course it's owned by Qatar and Saudis.
So we should be Tesco.
Else.
Is that what you're saying? We should.
That's Tesco's probably owned by someone else. I don't know. I think Tesco is still independent, isn't it? As independent as the largest supermarket chain in the world could possibly be. but I don't know. I don't know. Let us know. Is there anywhere that we can shop that isn't compromised by human rights or something else? I don't know. Probably not. Probably we're all buggers.
But I have you watched the wheelchair rugby?
No, I did see it though, and I was like, I was intrigued as to how that works.
It's my new favourite sport. It's just
explain.
So they've with the BBC losing all of the sports, it means you suddenly get a lot more women's football, a lot more alternative sports, and this is one where you think, oh wow, is this just to fill time, because there was only 3,000 people actually watching it in the Flex, which was a world record. But wheelchair rugby,
so still more than the world athletics European champs. So.
Yeah, true. But the wheelchair rugby is, I think, five-a-side rugby in a sports hall, where it's a bit like tag, but it's fully brutal. They're just ramming into each other, trying to ram through as well. A little bit like British Bulldogs, but with a rugby ball in wheelchairs. Wow. And they've cleverly tied it to the Rugby World Cup now, the Rugby League World Cup. So previously it was a sport that it actually started in France. It got resurrected. Quite a few teams were entering. And then they decided not to do one of the World Cups because they couldn't afford it. The players couldn't afford to go to Australia because it's just not enough big enough sport. So tying it to the World Cup suddenly gives it that, it wraps it all up together. So it gets that profile. But It's so fun to watch. And this is the first time I've seen refereeing so bad, where one of the lines, so there was a French linesman and an English linesman, and the French linesman took it upon themselves to try and recorrect what they thought were unjust previous decisions in the game by then just being biased. And the referee then has to try and overrule this linesman who's just cheating by the end of it. And he then starts to lose his rag, the linesman. So he starts shouting at the referee for his decisions and starts abusing him. And this is all when the game is neck and neck, where England have had quite a few decisions go against them, including a couple of tries. And it's just incredible to see where the referee, so the linesman refused to put on a medal they received at the end. And they were then booed by the whole arena as they came through, shaking the hands of the head of the association. I think it's Claire Boulding. So go and watch it, the whole game. It's such a good sport. And I think it will genuinely grow and just be a spectator sport in its own right, because there's so much action, so much speed, and so much skill on display as well. So it's on the iPlayer. There's finally a reason to watch something on the iPlayer. So yeah, go back and England France the final, unbelievable.
Wow, I tell you, I do find it interesting the choice of sports that the BBC decide to put on, because no matter how desperate they get for things to show, and this is good, this is a perfect opportunity, they always make way for fucking snooker. Oh my god, like we don't really watch like terrestrial TV, but when the World Cup's on, we have been, and so yeah, we have it on in like the other room, and but it makes you realize, like on a Saturday, that there's nothing on. There's just nothing on TV at all. And but it just seems to be snooker, like every fucking weekend, on the whole of BBC Two. Is snooker really that popular?
It's probably just that cheap to film, because you don't...
Yeah,
you
single about, camera, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you don't even really need audio that much, because what happens in it? Nothing.
No.
I guess it's meditative. It's probably the type of thing they have at old people's homes just to calm them down, sort of reassuring.
Calm them down? Why? Why would they be going crazy?
I'm just thinking of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So I guess it's not an old people's home. Slightly different. But now, there's quite a lot of articles and various things out at the moment. What I was reading, so Runner's World I really like Runner's World, actually, these days. They've really got a huge variety in their writing now. But I was surprised. So there was an article all about a female runner calling out the kind of the pressure of running for a very successful high school team in the States. Then it said, so I was reading it and just quite surprised. She, at the age of 14, at the end of her freshman year, her weekly training began with a 13-mile run on a Monday morning before school. And then they'd usually return for another 6 miles in the afternoon. She was, the team at the age of 14 were doing on average 60 to 80 miles a week.
Is that normal?
I don't know. I mean, that to me is insane. That's the kind of mileage you do for an ultra. So if you were training, if I was training for a sub-3, typical sub-3 London marathon type thing, or even sub-2:45, sub-3, you'd do, 56 miles, you'd probably max out. If you're going 2:45, you might bump it up a bit. But that's the kind of mileage Dan Lawson would be doing as his base rate, I think I recall. I think he was on about 70.
Yeah.
So to be doing that at the age of 14, when you're developing physically, that's got to stunt your growth. Because your energy system is going to be absolutely screwed. All of your energy is going to be going into just surviving, and there's going to be nothing left for growth. So I'd love to know whether the individuals at the school, and they were calling out and just saying that she was saying that the parents just thought it was normal and didn't have, you know, weren't thinking it through. But it seems like it's still going on. I'd love to know whether the individuals, like the height of the graduates of this training regime is you'd be able to track it and see whether it is having an impact on them. But how are you, like, that feels like a Russian level of mileage, you know, a kind of, we're gonna break you in the hope that someone doesn't break and they're incredible.
Yeah, because if you, like, with the type of sports where you go really, really young, where you think of, you know,
kind of gymnastics,
you know, gymnastics, you think gymnastics, diving. You know, what, yeah, you know, what age are they retired in gymnastics? Mid-20s? Like, exactly. You're done. You're done by that amount of time. Whereas running's different. Running, you know, there's time to, you know, build the endurance and the rush isn't needed. You don't have to, you know,
you can be winning marathons in your 40s. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Kipchoge, actually, I don't think we'd actually know how old Kipchoge is, but I think he's in his 40s now. But just amazed me that our American listeners, is this a freak team? It was, which one was it? It's based in Great Oak High School in Temecula, California. Like, is this normal? Because we don't really have running teams in the same way, I don't think, at schools, do we? You might do a cross-country race, but I don't think we've got the powerful track coach that people care, that people choose schools for.
Why don't we steal more stuff from America, ideas from America to do stuff? Why are we breaking our kids? I mean, like, not specifically that, but you say that we don't really have, like, track teams. Why has someone tried that? Because someone must have tried doing something like that in a school and it's not worked, or it hasn't fit with the system or something like that. There must be examples of that.
There must be something to do with recruitment, because American sport, collegiate sport, I believe is mostly driven out of recruitment. And so if maybe our system's different, so you have to go where you go, really, unless you're paying for private.
But you think at least in the private system, you know, they could have put something together. Like, if you ever heard of anything like that happening in the, you know, like some US ideas being brought to the UK in terms of, like, attracting stuff like that, let us know, because I'm intrigued as to see, you know, what happened, like whether someone did this experiment and why it hasn't moved across.
And that there certainly are schools that specialize in sport, like private schools, that are unknown for. I think you'd get, like, Gresham's were incredible at hockey, and some, if you look at, like, Colston's and the like, are great at rugby. I don't know if it works in the same way for cross-country running, because, or for track. Maybe it does. I mean, we'd always get thrashed by Marlborough College. I don't know whether that was just because we were shit and they were great, or whether that's part of their system. But
when we were at school, and I don't know why this happened, like, when we played rugby, like, we played against, like, we were comprehensive, we played against, like, some private schools, and I don't really understand why, because we would get destroyed. Like, we would get, like, utterly destroyed, to the level of, what is the actual point of doing this? Or, you know, this is actually embarrassing. And I thought that was perfectly normal. But then I realised, you know, as you, when you have children, that's not normal, that private schools don't tend to play comprehensives simply for that reason. So I never really understood why they did that.
just keep you in your place, so it was.
I know. I, like, what was this? It's just like, okay, like, these kids are actually dicks. Come on, let's get a couple of private schools to come along, take them down a peg or two. You can hire out really good private school sports teams to smash your teams in order to just, you know, just to teach them a lesson. That would be quite a good money earner.
Well, do people pay for that? Maybe the teachers would have the lippy kids. Yeah. So it's like paying the school bully to protect a child, isn't it? It's kind of reverse of
that. That's exactly it. They take direct debits now. It's brilliant.
But what else has been happening? So there's some really interesting new research to do with metabolism and how it's another Runner's World article, actually. Big shout out to Runner's World this week.
Research, go on, follow the money. Who's done this research?
This is...
I feel like we have to do that every time we talk about research, don't we? Like, you know.
Oh, just in case... just in case Tim Noakes comes back on and
who's paying for it?
Who's paying for it?
Who's paying for it? I mean, that is a good question. Who is paying for it? But tell me what the conclusion is, and I'll guess who's funded it. Go on, let's do that.
Well, I think this is legitimate research. Actually, looking at it, it's done by Herman Ponser, PhD, Associate Professor of Evolutionary Anthropology at Duke University. It's saying that actually our thinking that you can change your metabolism isn't true. So
you can't change your metabolism.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a huge one when we've always kind of, there's that whole kickstart your metabolism. There's,
it's bullshit, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of doing certain sports changes your metabolism, all these things. And,
building muscle changes your metabolism, exactly. Like so much of the health and fitness and wellness industry depends on that specific element that specific lie that is going to be revealed. Go on.
So it says,
the lie.
Whether slow or fast, your metabolism doesn't predict weight gain. And it showed that... running may burn some calories, but it won't boost your metabolism, at least not in the long run. And how they did tests where, and I read this a few days ago, so I've forgotten half of what I was going to talk about. Total energy expenditure, so calories burned each day, is a repeatable measure, like height or other things that are stable for you, apparently. So some people are just fast, some people are slow, and what they've said, no matter what sport you do or kind of what weight you are, that doesn't necessarily correlate to being overweight or underweight. And the main thing from the study was we're saying actually that the real issue with putting on weight is almost the food system we're in now, because the body is actually incredibly good at understanding how many calories it needs. It's just that, we match our energy needs with greater than 99% accuracy. The problem is that due to the food environment in which most of us live, that 1% mismatch is consistently in the same direction, overconsumption.
Ah, okay.
And so if we were to just eat normal foods, like unprocessed foods and not fast foods, and the suggestion is that we wouldn't be overweight, because actually our body is so good at regulating what it needs and responding to it. Having spoken to the gastrophysicist, where he was saying exactly the same thing. It's actually all the surroundings that have an impact. So our bodies adjust how much energy we're expending during our non-exercise hours to keep the total daily calorie burn within a very narrow range, apparently. I don't know if it's good news or bad news. The good news is
it depends. Can you change your environment? If not, it's bad news.
Yeah. It seems that diet is the biggest impact. And while you can you can increase your physical activity, it won't change your metabolism. It will increase your energy needs, and your body will naturally yearn for more and tell you to eat more.
I tell you what, though, having written for so many like health promotions, like for so long, the metabolism thing has felt like a stretch. The idea you can do something in order to, you know, increase your metabolism, you know, you have that kind of afterburn of, you know, lifting some weights or doing some kind of like HIIT exercise that increases your, you know, keeps your metabolism increased after you've exercised for 24 hours and, you know, various things like that, which you're like, oh, there's not really any kind of, it's used. So, I mean, it's so ubiquitous. The idea that you can change your metabolism. The idea that that's not true at all. Is going to be quite shocking. I'm just looking at some of the stuff that he has put out, and it is kind of this whole everything you know about your nutrition is wrong, because he seems to be like world's expert on metabolism.
We should get him on, actually. I'll reach out to him. So it says here, while runners will obviously see day-to-day fluctuations in the energy they burn more on long run days than, say, recovery days, our bodies adjust how much energy we're expending during our non-exercise hours to keep the total daily calorific burn within a fairly narrow range. You only need to look at how seriously elite athletes take their rest to see this balancing act in action. So we'll get them on to talk about it. And it does say at the end, though, the good news is that the physical activity does seem to have an effect on regulating consumption.
It doesn't necessarily burn calories, but what it does is it regulates your need to consume calories.
Those who exercise are broadly speaking less likely to overeat than those who don't. Anecdotally,
I would say that's absolutely true. Like if I'm running, I definitely eat less. Definitely, or I eat better.
I eat more, but I think it's I almost kick in. I start eating more, but I guess even as a percentage, the more you eat, then having slightly like one bite too much is less of a as a percentage over. No, it doesn't really.
I would say I eat less. I should be more specific with things. I eat less shit. I definitely eat like less sugar, like less sugary things. I eat better, I think, when you're exercising. Because if you're doing exercise every day, and you know that you've got to get up the next day and do some more exercise, like the feeling of how that's going to feel makes a difference as well from a psychological perspective. And there's a general feeling too, isn't it? Which is why I think always, whenever you've had a gap in exercise, the most difficult part is not to slip back into bad eating habits. To have that plan out. Yeah, let's get him on, because that looks great. He's got a book, Burn, How We Burn Calories and Stuff. So it's got one of those, but he's got one of those headlines, How We Burn Calories, Lose Weight and Stay Healthy. It's like, you're like, every weight loss book says that.
Yeah, it? Yours is the like, thing. We it's need like, yours to actually be read. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it like more aggressive.
You're doing it wrong. You're becoming fat because you're blah, 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 blah. Here's the proof. Now, you've always got to end with, here's why. That's the thing that everyone writes now in copywriting. Here's how.
You make a statement and then you say, here's why. You don't ever do it as a question anymore. Like, you're burning calories wrong. Here's why.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll get them on to actually find out what we can do with this, and how we can leverage this to actually benefit us in our lives. Now, have you seen the people have
new
been...
caffeine bullet flavor out?
Oh,
left. I vote left. I didn't comment on your post, but I vote left. Surely it's left. Come on, the other one's a fake one. It's the left.
Less than sophisticated choice.
It is sophisticated.
Indeed. Well, we're still a few months away, I think, from launching our ginger chew.
Is vegan?
These are vegan. They are indeed vegan, and they're bloody delicious. And that's not like someone looking at their baby and saying it's not ugly. This is. Briggsy keeps on eating them all, the ones in the house. She's like, get it out. This is where we make the money.
I've heard she loves a bit of ginger.
She does. G-Law's often round. He's always find his shoes. Don't know why. Did you see the article about people have been loving the fact that a Chinese runner has done a sub 3:30 marathon while chain smoking?
Oh, brilliant.
It's
brilliant. I say like it, that looks like most people doing the not that distance, but that's most people who are doing the beerathon. Isn't it?
Yeah, true, actually. Yeah.
The blending between the social and the running, it's very, very fluid.
Yeah, indeed.
I've heard like people tell tales of like UTMB French runners coming in on UTMB and other races like that, you know, coming in, lighting up a cigarette and then literally dropping a cigarette and running off again. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's smoking and running. It seems to be okay. But actually doing it while running, I mean, that is something special.
Yeah, and he does look cool. That's the thing.
He does look cool. He's... I've always said that about Sam. I don't care what you say about it, and I don't care how upset people go. It does look cool. Oh, but does lung cancer look cool, Jody? Does lung cancer? No, it doesn't. But he looked cool.
Yeah, I mean, and what I like about this is it's classic. Like I'd imagine a lot of the story is made up because
well, it's from China, so it's bound to be predominantly made up or completely untrue.
Well, it's like paragraphs like local media have reportedly said that Chen in fact only smokes when he runs, and that he's been doing so at multiple marathons before. No one has yet to explain why he does it. So he doesn't smoke normally, but he smokes cigarettes when he runs marathons.
I mean, it's a great way to open up a level of sponsorship that probably, you know, sponsors would never really consider. It's like, but I think that's a really good idea. Like, you know, when people, people started having beers on ultras and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a good way of like, because a beer company, you know, would think, oh, how do I, you know, how would I tap this audience in that way? So I do actually think that, you know, you need to like find a product and then start using it in races and go, oh, yeah, it's an important part of my like race prep or important part of my race I always wear Swarovski diamonds every time I run because it's really important. Yeah, I always wear like Prada or something. I don't know.
There's going to be a range of like bum bag, hot cigarette holding bum bags suddenly coming out and like 50 different new products linked on how to carry your cigarettes before the run.
I do like the idea of a running pack with a holder for a packet of fags and a lighter. I do think that's quite good.
But he's got
a little ashtray,
Now we don't really know any Chinese runners who can tell us anything about this story. But if you're out there,
does anyone
run
and smoke? Well, like, you know, this story really captures imagination. It's when it's posted 50 times individually in the Facebook group, because people are just so excited about seeing it.
But then, I mean, there's quite a few hashers who've smoked roll ups and stuff on the way around and stop and have a cigarette. And I think one guy called Damien from the States. Yeah, it was known for it. But we like this. We want to see more stuff along these lines. What else? Is someone going to be shooting up next? Is someone going to be doing...
Pipe runners? Come on, that's got to be a whole group of people. And it's cheating if it's vaping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vape runners is cheating. We're not interested in that.
But he's been given the name Smoking Brother, which made me think that actually we've never followed up on what people's trail names are. From the Christian episodes now come out, where he talks about his mum's name. Is it gun section?
Gun section. Yeah.
So the trail names people have given themselves. We've got The Shart by Mark Blatt. I think that's a good one. Lady Garden. Yeah, Charles is his hashtag. Did you ever come up with your own trail name for yourself?
I didn't come up with a trail name for myself. No, I don't. No.
Now, did Sarah, who I won't mention her full name for reasons, that she said that she'd have the same name as she's given her cat because he looks cool until he starts moving on three legs. His name's Hitler. That's quite an aggressive cat name, isn't it?
I don't know if it's aggressive. I'm like, I can imagine people calling a cat Hitler.
Can you imagine the posters when if Hitler goes missing? Would you go
answers
putting
answers to Hitler? Mind you, anyone knows a cat doesn't answer to fucking anything.
Yeah, true, true. But fewer people have answered with names. I thought this would get more engagement. Kieran said his name would be Fuck This.
Fuck This.
I think that's probably my favourite one. Yeah, I thought more people would go for their trail names. I don't think it's in an Irish accent. Fuck This.
Fuck This. Fuck This. Fuck This all around.
And there seem to be, at the moment, a lot of open letters.
Oh, I fucking hate an open letter. Oh, what? Just, who gives a shit what you think? Honestly. Fucking hell. Oh, open letter. It's like people, do you see the thing on Twitter? Because everyone's going fucking crazy on Twitter. Oh, why I'm leaving Twitter? I don't give a shit. Like, you're on Twitter saying why you're leaving Twitter. Fuck off. Oh God, open letters are the worst. Open letter to the lady who was rude to my son at the supermarket. Who gives a shit? I don't believe a word that you're saying. Make a complaint to the relevant people rather than doing an open letter and trying to get fucking engagement.
I wasn't expecting this kind of reaction from you. When
who writes an open letter? Honestly, who does it? Like, write a letter and then just show people the letter that you've written. Who writes a fucking...
You'd rather people walk around with a letter. You'd rather they like, oh, JD, how you doing? Look at my letter.
I just like make the relevant complaint to the relevant person and do it in the right way and then share afterwards that you've done it. An open letter. That's so fucking cowardly. Oh, I'm not going to actually go through the process of doing something about this. I'm going to write an open letter to the fucking internet so that they can, so everyone can fucking pile in and like it and shit. Fuck off.
Oh, well, this is awkward.
I know. Go on. Who is it? Is it someone you know?
Killian.
Who is it?
Yeah, Killian and wow, this is huge. So
what?
When I first checked, so this was an open letter that Killian and Francesco Pupi and I think Pascal Egli and Emily Forsberg had formed together. So they're kind of creating an alliance, a union, it's called Trail Runners, trailrunners.run.
Yeah.
And the idea is it's forming, uniting professional trail runners.
Right.
So they've written an open letter, but now I've just looked at members and I can't remember if I clicked on this space before and it was just the four of them. And now there seem to be like a huge number of people who've signed up. So just looking down this list, you've got...
When you say it's an open letter, like what exactly is it? What's it calling for?
So and this has been discussed. So anti-doping. Following up on what we said about courts, it says we demand anti-doping controls from WADA for all races that are part of an international circuit. They're saying it's you know, when you... That's the first one. Second one, environmental responsibility. Third one, calendar clash. And fourth one, union of athletes, a professional trail runners organization. We want to unite and stand together to preserve our rights.
Four asks in one letter.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
And okay. it asks people to join. So we'll go to the points in a sec. But just looking at the members.
That's not an open letter. That's a bloody recruiting call, that is.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, massively.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So just looking down the list, and it's public, so I think, yeah, it's fine for me to read it out. You've got the people mentioned, but then Pau Capay's on there. You've got, who are the other big names? Tom Evans, Sarah Alonso, Kane Fielder, Fred Tranchard, Lucy Bartholomew. Wow, Camille Herron.
Explain to me. Is he asking people to commit to something or just agree? What is the purpose?
So the trouble is, there are too many organisations, and they're all competing. And actually, having said this, the same breath, the ITRA are now launching their own trail series. So you've got another set of races coming on board. And so, well, let's look at them point by point, because this is finally an area of expertise in my life, which we've not really had often in the podcast. But
so and, why are we breaking it now? Like, if you've got an area of expertise, we need to avoid this at all costs. It opens us up to much more criticism.
It does. So firstly, WADA, anti-doping, completely get it. If you're one of the athletes, you're clean, and there are huge races out there that don't have WADA testing. Sierra's an owl. There was WADA testing, and Mark Congogo was done for doping. But you've got to be more nervous. We've talked about the issue with doping from Russia in the past, from Kenya, 200 since 2017, Ethiopia. And so the worry is that there's just athletes out there who are going to dope, turn up and win. And so the trouble is, though, that WADA decides which races they do. And so they're asking, the way I'm hearing this is they're almost asking organizations like the Golden Trail, UTMB, World Sky Race Federation, to follow these practices, whereas actually they have no choice in the matter. WADA decides or not whether they're going to be involved. And I think there's a belief that you pay WADA and they come, and they'll be back in court. But that's not the case. They'll turn up for some races, and particularly in North America, it sounds like WADA will do that, but they don't.
Why is there a mismatch in understanding? Surely
because no one's communicating properly, or no one's listening, or no one's unless someone does an open letter. Like, how else do you communicate these facts? And
Because with an open letter,
yeah,
what you're normally doing is you're hoping for a response from someone.
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't sound like it's quite the same open letter. I'm desperately trying to dig myself out of this one. It doesn't sound it's quite as open letter in the sense that, it's asking for people to essentially back the things that are being said in it. But who would respond to this in order to answer those points? Are there too many organisations that they wouldn't be able to do that? I mean, is that the point?
Well, this is step one, really. And just looking at that list of athletes, it's substantial. And are they, if you get the whole premise of a union is that you then decide collectively. So is this step one, where step two would be, we're going to boycott your series?
But how can that work? Well, when you've got so many ultra runners who are part of teams and have sponsorship, I'm like, could they do that? Are they able to do that without?
It really depends on the sponsor, depends on the individual athlete,
their profile as well. I mean, like, yeah, you could see the top ones being able to do that, but I suppose that's the point if it is a union. But will all the top runners adhere to what the decision of that union is, and who's going to run that union, and who's going to make those decisions? Is there enough?
Yeah, because I mean, talking about the athletes, like, if you're Hoka, you've got to do UTMB because they sponsor it. If you're Golden Trail, if you're Salomon, you're going to have to do Golden Trail. If you're Adidas, you've got to do, I can't remember the Adidas one that Robbie has to do. But
burn, hashtag burn.
But if the sport is almost in a, you could boycott quite easily because not everyone does UTMB every year, for example. If you look at like the Pau Capés, the Francois Danes, the Killian, they're almost not.
You can't ever escape UTMB. It'll be like Procter and Gamble. You won't ever be able to. Whatever you do will be UTMB.
But
the
sport is, because of the age of people like Killian, Francois, they're both quite mature athletes now, and are kind of statements for the
statesman.
Sir. Chewing my words, statesmen for the sport who are still involved, but actually they're not in the stage of their career where they have to be doing races for their profile, yeah, or for their legacy or for their earnings. Or so,
yeah. And Killian's independent in a way that others,
yeah, aren't, yeah, 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 absolutely. And so you could see them leading the way and others following. But the I think that the challenge is, well, the points themselves. You've got the environmental responsibility, and you know the issue is, if you're an international series, that's the issue. You need to travel, and you can't get around that. So I don't know what being more environmentally responsible. The good thing about the anti-doping, they've said what they've won. With the calendar, they've said a few things that they've won. Environmental responsibility is very hard to actually to say that you are being environmentally responsible and and not just greenwashing.
Because I do think with the environmental thing about when you're talking about the International Trail Series is that it's all fine to say, you know, reducing travel, you know, keeping things where they are. But when you have parts of the world where they have, you know, less developed race series, where, you know, having, you know, building that international element brings something that they don't have before and it helps develop it.
Yeah.
It almost, you know, there's a kind of a balance to be made between, you know, there's going to be a cost doing this, but there's going to be an element of needing to develop that and having some putting some infrastructure in and having the travel that needs to do that in order, you know, and everything that goes with that. So I think there's that kind of that pull, isn't there, that's difficult.
And there's also the unintended consequences where you'd just the structure of series will have an impact on the environmental footprint, because say the Golden Trail, you can qualify for the Golden Trail series finals or the elite by racing in your own country.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people do. Whereas something like UTMB, because you can qualify by your points or by your results, that actually encourages people to race in different countries, because if you're French or you're Spanish, you're in a country with a huge amount of competition and very high standard races.
Well, Ironman, you know, is predicated on trying to encourage you to travel.
Yeah. And similarly, if I tactically was trying to qualify for UTMB, I'm going to travel to the shittest race in UTMB series because it's less competitive, and therefore I've got more chance of doing well, getting my points, qualifying, .. But they're also asking for, they said, we demand that the different federations, so you've got ITRA, WMRA, World Athletics, International Skyrunning Federation, and private organisations, UTMB, Golden Trail Series. You've also got Spartan on top of that. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different organisations work together to establish a better calendar. And that's what everyone wants, actually. I think the races want it as well. But why would you estimate that isn't happening?
Well, it's going to be competition, isn't it? I mean, that's the issue.
Yeah, you can't. They just can't fit. There's too many organisers, and also the nature of races. You have a finals, which is the end of the season. And we've had COVID, which means there's been races. We talked about Thailand and how they deferred that 7 years. But then you've also got UTMB bang in the middle, which is a once in a
year.
Yeah, it's kind of a once in a year race that actually is sucks in all of your training. And that's in the middle. So if you're the other series, like how...
Are these all these races? Are we talking about specific elites here? You know, just elite runners here, or you know, are a lot of these race organisations? You know, of course, you know, things like Golden Trail stuff. You've just got elites competing, but you know, a lot of those other races. Are we talking about just the ones that are part of trail series that are part of the most competitive top end races? There's going to be people. If not, it's going to affect people who you know aren't elites in another way. How does that break down?
Well, I think for the non-elites, it's not as much of an issue because it's only really when you get to the elite level that you're having to race enough races, or to qualify, or to get points, or for your sponsor. And you've got the finals, where if you and I were to do these races, we'd just do one or two, and we choose our race calendar based on the races we want to do, not on we need to have done three of these and then do that and the final, and only the Europeans, but then only the world.
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, you know, are some of these races, you know, when they are because of, you know, trying to attract as many people as possible.
I see.
Yeah, and that's why they're at certain times. You know, like, we always know that, you know, city marathons in the UK is always April, or, you know, and now bloody October, or September, October. And so, you know, there's always things that they're specifically placed based on local, you know, or regional variances, whereby that you know, because it's not just a race for the elite, it's a bigger race. There are kind of factors like that can't ever change.
I think a lot of the races are stuck in the rhythm of their rhythm without, you know, the fact that you can move London Marathon for three seasons to
I mean, that's it, isn't it? Yeah.
When, you know, that's logistically one of the top three biggest logistics of any race in the world. You've got to do closing down streets and stuff. But, that's
part of the issue. The argument. Well, if London can do it, that's it. They just do that with it. London can do it.
Yeah. But that's part of the issue as well, is that, say you've got some organizations where UTMB is their race over their week. It's always that, you know, they set their week. They didn't really care about anyone else because they don't need to. And it's in the middle of the season, which is frustrating. Would be great, actually, if it was the end of the season, or even would be brilliant if it was in January. So it'd be terrible for everyone's training, but it would then stop clashes and people could focus, do the races in the season, build up their mileage at the end of the season, do UTMB, rinse and repeat. But you've then got, like, Golden Trail, for example, what piggybacks other people's races. So if they want to have Sierra Zonal in it because it's the biggest trail race in the world, they want to have Zagama in it because it's, you know, one of the oldest, most prestigious trail races in the world. And so even within that, I'm not that sure where the decision lies. Whether it's, I don't think Golden Trail get to set the dates of those races. And so if you're then combining
it has to go back another level in order to, you know, for possibly people that aren't part of those organizations.
Yeah. So that's the thing, it's a layer beneath it as well. Yeah, absolutely. It would be but it would be better for everyone if the calendars didn't clash. And we had the Golden Trail World Series, five back-to-back races the week before the World Championships. And some people didn't come to the Golden Trail because of that. Some people came and only ran a couple of races. And some people didn't do the World Champs because of that. And that's a real shame, because There's people like Stian Angermans who won the Golden Trail last year, who's just a great guy, great runner. You want to see him racing again. But then you've got Remy Bonnet, who was in the form of his life and didn't get to the World Champs. And I wish he had, because I want to know how he'd have done, because he's just so good right now. And so you're almost denying the spectacle of having a proper champion, of the real head to heads that you want. But I don't know how to resolve it. When
is it a case of it's going to take a couple of those organizations to move
to collapse? Yeah, I think.
Oh no, I mean, like, a couple of those organizations to actually start working together to improve the calendar, and then on being put back on the athlete's side of saying, look, we're not going to races that, you know, these people are starting to move. We're going to support them because they're actually moving the calendar and they're thinking about us. And so if you want us to come to your races and also attend your races, you need to start working with them. It's like, is there a chance that anyone can move first so that then the athletes can respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, and I genuinely do think, you know, I'm hugely biased in this. Everyone knows that.
Well, of course you would.
But I genuinely do think Greg, who runs the Golden Trail, he is always trying to figure out dates to work. So Small things like the Flagstaff race, trail race. It was a new race in America. And Strand of Fjord in Norway is a new race in the Golden Trail. And that the whole intent of that, he couldn't decide the fixtures until he knew when Sierra Zanao was and when he knew when Pikes Peak. And so these two races were almost crowbarred into the series so that American athletes can come over and do two races in one trip. And similarly, right. European races could go to America and do a road trip and do two races in one.
Yeah,
in...
that's really smart.
And so, you know, they are, he is, his whole scheduling is based around trying to make a system that is good for the athletes. But then you've still got the finals and everyone's finals is at the end of the season. And that's the hard part because no one actually wants to clash because no one wins. It's not good for anyone if you're forcing athletes to decide. But there's almost too many players at the moment. And I won't say who I was talking to, but I was speaking to someone very senior in this organization, Trail Runners, and saying that it's not enough to ask them. You almost need to show them how it can work and almost create a calendar for them saying, look, this is the only way that everyone wins, because otherwise there's, people are too busy. There's too many moving
parts.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. It's like you have to kind of either jump on a small amount of movement in order to by the organisations to go, this is the right thing to do. This is the right direction. We fully support this.
Yeah,
but it relies on them taking the making the first move or coming up with something and presenting it and go, look, this is how it should look. This is what works better. So
yeah,
it's much more proactive. What will work?
Yeah, and you're never going to change UTMB dates, I don't think. And if you look at the repercussions of that, we had on the Golden Trail, numerous athletes just weren't performing post UTMB because they're screwed. Is it okay to name them? Is it bad? Well, no, I think it's fine actually. Some amazing athletes you've got Thibaut, Caitlin Fielder, Manu Marilius, all incredible athletes who focus massively, and Danny Marino focus massively on UTMB week. And that tiredness doesn't leave your system unless you're someone like Killian who's used to racing huge mileage week in, week out. It just lags for the rest of the season. And so actually that is always going to be a huge issue if you're wanting to do these other series, because you can't shake out a 100-mile trail run, even a 100K trail run from your legs in 4 weeks or so. So there's always going to be this pressure, but be super interesting to see how this develops. And they like, looking at that list, they've got a lot of people. It soon gets to the point where if you're not on the list, you look like a dick. Because you're suddenly the person who's ruining it for everyone else.
So you're anti-environmental concerns, are you? So you're pro-global warming, are you? Because you're not on the list.
Yeah, or that your actions are actually undermining the ability of all other athletes.
Your actions? What, by not signing up? By not putting your name to it? Fucking hell. Isn't that like the worst like example of? I mean, that's the problem, isn't it, with a fucking open letter? Is that if you don't go click on it and go, oh, I really support you on this. Oh, they shouldn't have said that to your son. Oh, I'd put a complaint in or something like that. Yeah, you're like, oh, your silence is deafening on this subject.
But to sign up, you actually have to pass their criteria, which is
what.
I think we should try and sneak a deep.
Oh, this isn't an open letter. This is just fucking boasting. What is their criteria? Oh, you must do.
You need to be. Where's it?
Would you make the cut, David? Would you make the cut?
So you can join either in the top 30 of ITRA ranks, or UTMB ranks, or World Mountain Runner Association, or GT Golden Trail, of the current year or the past 3 years. Or have a professional monetary contract for the practice of trail running competitions for the current year. I'd suggest the first one's a lot harder than the second one.
Monetary contract. I mean, that could include you. You are, yeah. I mean, you're not being paid to run, but you are being paid by a trail organisation.
And if not, I mean, Kathy Bullock can afford to sponsor me a fiver. Well, three quid. So there is that. That's the way to get in. If you want to be on that list. Have an application, people. See if you can get in. Let's see if we can get any D-banders on that list. Just because it'd be really interesting to know from the inside. But I'm obviously very aware that I'm right in the middle here with Gone Trail and with lots of friends. So it could be explosive. Let's just say that it could be really impactful because it's led by some very senior athletes. So yeah, open letters away.
Open letters. Yeah, please. If you're in the Facebook group, please feel free to write an open letter about anything. Just write an open. I want to have a flowering of open letters in the Facebook group about any little thing that has bothered you, any minor inconvenience. The funnier, the better.
In fact, can the person who really riles Jody on YouTube? Can you write an open letter on YouTube about?
It doesn't rile me. I'm happy with that. The fact he's responding is good enough for me. I put him down as like one of our top three engagers, to be honest. So it doesn't rile me at all. I'm a fan of his.
and are we going to put in any? What's the question for this week? Should we put in the group? We haven't really covered
open
anything.
Letters, yes or no?
Open letters, yes. How do we feel about open letters? And we know how you feel. Yeah. That's going to be the question in the group this week. We'll do better feedback next time because I've spoken on for quite a while.
We need to talk about Welcome to Wrexham as well. We haven't spoken about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I've also got another television suggestion as well to put in there.
Oh, have you?
Yes, indeed.
Talking about dodgy broadcasts, when's this going to come out? A couple of weeks?
Next Friday. Yeah.
Next Friday. Okay, so there's still time. So David and I are doing something very, we haven't done before, have we?
True.
We're going to be, we certainly haven't made it publicly available so that you can see what an absolute shit show it is when we're recording. But on the 10th of December, David and I are going to be recording a podcast in Brewdog. Brewdog. Where was it? Which one is it? I forgot which Brewdog it is, which is a bit of an issue seeing as I need to get there.
Waterloo.
Perfect. Waterloo. It's Brewdog Waterloo. They've got podcasting rooms. And also a slide.
Yes. And
so we have booked a podcasting room, which I think you can watch us podcast in. I think they're kind of open, with windows.
You can rub your junk up to the glass while we're recording.
Please don't rub your junk up to the glass. Don't do that, because David will rub his junk back to you, and that's the issue. So if you want to pop along and see us, podcasting. There's a possibility you might even get on the podcast as well, depending on how much we've had to drink beforehand, which is a definite possibility doing a podcast in a pub. It's what we wanted to do for a long time. And now finally Brewdog have made it a possibility.
Yes. And how do you feel about that? Because I'm aware that a lot of people hate Brewdog now, and I'm indifferent.
I do hate Brewdog. Someone described Brewdog the other way brilliantly. Wetherspoons for Remainers. I mean, that is just such a brilliant description.
Wetherspoons for Remainers. Yeah, that's me. That's me. And I love Wetherspoons
as
well.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so good. I don't know. Well, it's weird, isn't it? How kind of like all the stuff that he's done is kind of just kind of been forgotten by a whole group of people. Like when you see like post, but normally when someone's done such, like any time, like Alistair Campbell posts something, invariably the very first comment underneath it is about the Iraq War.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is about the Iraq War. Everything. He cannot make a comment without it being it. And so, you're used to the fact that people's pasts are constantly, dredged up on social media. But with Brewdog, it's kind of, I think it's weird. Like, I look on, it's like your LinkedIn posts and a Twitter post and things like that. And like, it's like so few people like bring it up. I'm like,
oh no, I've seen it a lot.
Oh, have
LinkedIn.
You? It feels as though, like kind of it's either someone's doing an amazing moderation job or that people have kind of like forgiven and forgotten. I was like, this doesn't feel like normal social media. Oh, but if you've seen it, maybe I've just, you know, it's been different. So it's still happening, is it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's always squeezed in there. Oh, well, how about blah, 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 blah. Well, you're treating your staff right. But yeah, well, come and watch us on the 10th, I believe, the Saturday, the 10th of December, 5 p.m.
Yeah, Waterloo. It's when we were having the Christmas party, but we are going to be having drinks now afterward, just because I think a few people have booked accommodation. They can't change it. But yeah, come along to that first. If you want to run the risk that you might end up in a podcast.
Boom. Can't say more exciting than that. Well, thanks for listening, guys. If there's any guests you'd recommend us chat to, any topics you want us to talk about or questions to answer, then message me, david@badboyrunning.com. We've got a crap load of fun people coming up, including former Babe Station ultra runner, Martin Yelling from Marathon Talks coming up.
Martin Yelling was never on Babe Station.
That's true. Not yet. We've also got Maren Gertz from the Backyard Ultra record holder. So it's an action-packed lineup these next few weeks. So message me with any suggestions and we'll go out and get them.
If you want to join the conversation, head over to Facebook, type in Bad Boy Running Podcast, answer 3 questions and join the fun there. If you want merch, store.badboyrunning.com and get whatever you can pick up in the run-up to Christmas. You're not going to get it before Christmas.
And if you're going to leave us a review, please put in an open letter review for Jody.
An open letter.
Yeah. You know he loves them. That's just it, guys. We'll see you next time.
See you later.
Admit I was a clown to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back, yes, and give me one more try, 'cause a love like this should I never ever die. Come back.
Fuck you, buddy.